Hello, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and this is number 0200, the Stuff File program, with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0200. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Bob Dorigo Jones from Let's Be Fair fame. He's back on the show, and that must mean it's time for the annual Wacky Warning Label Contest. Wacky warning labels have come to be because of some of the frivolous lawsuits that have been out there in the world.
I don't know if you've ever heard this lawsuit before. Somebody was jogging through Central Park, tripped over their shoelaces, and they sued one of the largest manufacturers of tennis shoes in the world and spent months and months in litigation. And they claimed that the shoelaces were too long.
Dr. Wendy J. James is a psychologist. She talks about the possibility of a plotline like the one in the movie The Purge becoming reality.
I think right now we're going through a moment in time where the basic needs, psychological safety needs and physical needs, is part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I'm seeing a lot of movies about those. The basic life needs of shelter, warmth, and security and protection. And this is talking about that being taken away.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and it's Batter Up on Book Banter as we go back in time to 1946 with The Victory Season, along with some other home-run books for the Diamond. So it's root, root, root for the home team, especially if you're a Red Sox or Cardinals fan, on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0200, was, me, Peter Anthony Holder, the host of the Stuff File program. I like to do the slate every, 100 shows. And since this is the 200th time that we've gotten together, I thought it was only fitting, since I did show number 1 and show number 100, and here we are, 200 shows later. So thanks to everyone, by the way, for listening to the Stuff File program and helping to make this show the success that it is. And thanks to me, Peter Anthony Holder, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay. As a prepper, Jason Dion Thomas, age 32, of St. Petersburg, Florida, is preparing for the end of the world. That's what they call them, preppers. And he intended to survive. To help, he had amassed 29 assorted guns, including a machine gun and plenty of ammunition, along with bulletproof vests, body armor, helmets, and gas masks. Among other problems, Thomas isn't allowed to possess weapons. He's not only a convicted felon, but he's also on probation. A neighbor called police because he thought Thomas was a drug dealer. And sure enough, the search also found cocaine, marijuana, and other drugs, as well as $7,390 in cash in Thomas's house. Thomas pleaded guilty to several federal charges and was sentenced to 8 years in prison. So let me get this straight. He gets to live rent-free in a concrete bunker. Well, considering he's a prepper, I guess mission accomplished. A to go, Jason. And while investigating alleged counterfeit post office checks, federal investigators discovered some problems with the payroll at Big C Tire Shop in Detroit, Michigan. Now, according to federal documents, employees were being paid with crack cocaine instead of money. Neighbors, including those living in a seniors center across the street, are hoping the bust is the beginning of bringing back the neighborhood. Federal prosecutors, however, said they will not be bringing drug charges against the owner. Why not? Because the evidence was better in the counterfeit check case, and federal counterfeiting charges carry stiffer penalties. Well, so So the message here is bad checks are more dangerous than crack. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Don't you think? Okay. Three men committed home invasion of a Houston residence on May 14th, and although two escaped, one wound up in the hospital and under arrest. The three men kicked in the door and shut a resident into an upstairs closet while they ransacked the home, but they failed to inspect the closet first and thus did not realize that it was the resident's handgun storage closet. A few minutes later, the resident emerged, locked and loaded, and wounded one of the men in the shoulder and leg. Okay, by the way, this story was not brought to you by the NRA. Sounds like it could have been, but it wasn't. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we here in Canada are considered a mild-mannered, friendly lot. And one of our most treasured national symbols is the innocuous, cute-as-a-button beaver. But don't be confused, folks, with our mild-mannered exterior or the innocence of the beaver, whether it's in our country or others. Case in point, a fisherman in Belarus wanted his photo shot with a beaver. The fisherman, who has not been named at the request of his family, that should give you a hint how this went, was driving with friends toward the lake west of the capital, Minsk, when he spotted the beaver along the side of the road and stopped the car. The beaver had other ideas. It attacked the 60-year-old man with razor-sharp teeth, slicing an artery and causing him to bleed to death. It was the most serious in a string of beaver attacks on humans in Belarus, as the rodents have turned increasingly aggressive when confronted by humans after wandering near homes, shops, and schools. A Russian wildlife expert said the large beaver population is beginning to cause significant damage to forests and farms. And the forestry ministry said it was encouraging the hunting of beavers, once prized for their fur and gland secretions, which were used for medicinal purposes. But since they're such an easy target near dams, says ministry spokesperson Alexander Kozaraz, beaver hunting holds little sporting interest. Hunting them is more like work, he said. Yeah. Apparently the thrill is gone when killing something isn't fun. And if you're keeping score, it's beavers 1, Russians 0. There you go. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Bob DiRigo Jones is a regular contributor to this show. Each week you hear his Let's Be Fair segments on the program. He's also the guy behind the annual Wacky Warning Labels contest, which proves just how far companies will go to avoid being sued by consumers for stupid mishaps. If you've heard last week's show, then you know that the nominations for the 16th annual contest have been announced. So Bob, who is also the author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, is on to talk with us about this year's entries via Skype-to-Skype communication from Michigan. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Peter. Nice to talk with you again.
Nice to talk with you again, as always. And I know every time I speak to you on the show, I always ask this question. Are you ever worried or concerned that you're going to run out of these things?
I was until this year. And I found out that three of our five finalists are put on products because of a California law that seems to be a warning label machine. And so I don't think we'll ever run out.
Wow. So in the years you've been doing this, including this year, the 16th year, are there things that, after all the time you've been doing this, really make you scratch your head going, really?
I learned something this time, this year, the first time in 16 years, that really made me scratch my head because I never heard of anything like this before. And I think it'll probably come as a revelation to a lot of your listeners. We always talk about that most of these warning labels are put on these products because the product maker is afraid that they'll be sued if they don't, or they have already been sued and they have to put that there because of that. Well, one of the warning labels, actually I said three earlier, three are there because of something known as Prop 65 in California. And what Proposition 65 did, it was a voter referendum that was approved by the voters. And they said that if any product contains one of 700 chemicals that the state of California believes cause cancer, then there has to be a warning label on that product. So that's why a metal fishing lure with three big hooks dangling off the end has to say warning, harmful if swallowed, because it actually has a little bit of a chemical that they think may cause cancer. Now, the short part of the story is most of these chemicals have no danger to humans because they're in such small amounts that they pose no danger. So we use these all the time. We use products that contain these chemicals. We never know it, and we're just fine. Shower curtains are one. Matches are another. They're in our contest. And this guy told me they invented a wonderful little product called a scooper for kitty litter. It's used in all the biggest pet stores across America. That somebody was going through a pet store, and they were being paid by an attorney, and they use a little spectrometer. And if it would go off by a product, they would take the product, and they would find out who it is, and they would sue them. So here you have people fishing for lawsuits with products that have never hurt anybody, but the person who makes that product could spend years and hundreds of thousands of dollars in litigation to protect themselves from going out of business because of somebody just prospecting for litigation. So that really made me scratch my head this year.
That's really unbelievable. Now, I've seen the press release of some of the finalists selected in this year, the 16th Annual Wacky Warning Labels Contest. And right off the top, I'm confused as to what the reasoning would be to put a label saying wash hands after using on an indoor extension cord.
Right. This is a kind of little white or brown extension cord that all your listeners are familiar with. We all use them. But on that warning label, that's one of the Prop 65 warnings. That must have some little chemical in there that's used, that's listed on the state of California's list of chemicals. And because it's in there, they have to put this warning label on there. And if they didn't, they could be sued.
Really?
It makes absolutely no sense. It's a hugely controversial issue, not only in California, but because anybody that makes a product in America tends to sell their product in California, and they want to use one label on their product, they'll put the warning label on every product sold everywhere in America. So Californians see it, people in New York, Florida, Michigan, where I am, we all see the same label, even though really the California law doesn't apply to anybody outside of California. And it's very dubious as to if there's any real benefit to this law. I've never heard of anybody that's been safe from touching something that could have caused cancer. But it has become a lawsuit and a revenue-generating machine for the lawyers that sue companies that are just oblivious to it until they're sued, basically.
Now, there's one that's on the list that I actually kind of understand, but I don't know how the warning prevents a potential lawsuit. And this is from not seeing the product itself. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I don't know if you've seen it. It's the one that says, not for human consumption, and it's a warning that's on a package of rubber worms made for fishing.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that, because they look a little bit like gummy worms that people are probably have seen, familiar with those. And people eat gummy worms, right? So it might make sense. These are like a shiny yellow metallic look, and it's very distinguishable when you see it that it's not a gummy worm, but it includes some little bit of metal in it, and because of the state of California, this is another Prop 65 warning. It has to have this warning label on it, or they could be sued. And it's the same thought that was behind the fishing lure that I mentioned, and that a family who's been in business for 100 years, never had a problem, sold thousands or probably millions, who knows, in 100 years. And they had to put that warning label on there simply because of the Proposition 65 law in California.
Now, there is a label on a commonly used pedometer, which is something people wear on themselves when they want to measure the distance they walk, correct?
Right. And people, if you look inside a cereal box, sometimes you find a little prize. And they advertise them on the front so they can sell more cereal. And this cereal maker had a noble goal of trying to get the people who eat their cereal to get out and walk and get exercise. But on the little pedometer that they put in their cereal, it came with about 14 different warnings. And one of the warnings is, quote, company will not be held responsible for any illness or injury that is incurred while using this pedometer. Now, you know that they're afraid that somebody's going to step in a hole, or somebody already did step in a hole and sued them, because these are the types of lawsuits that we see on a regular basis. And if they don't have that warning, the cause of action that the lawyer always brings is always the same. It's failure to warn. So if you put a warning covering just about every conceivable injury that can happen, then they can't sue you for failure to warn.
That thinking of that and the idea of someone tripping or falling when using one of these things makes me wonder, are the people who make shoelaces safe?
No, they're not. I don't know if you've ever heard this lawsuit before. Somebody was jogging through Central Park, tripped over their shoelaces, and they sued one of the largest manufacturers of tennis shoes in the world, and spent months and months in litigation, and they claimed that the shoelaces were too long.
Okay, I was being facetious. You're saying this actually existed.
It actually happened. You can't think. What's the old saying? Truth is stranger than fiction. It truly is.
Unbelievable. Now, the wacky warning label, these are the finalists. When will we know the winner?
In a couple of weeks, we'll take these five finalists and we'll go to John Stossel's studio audience at Fox News, and they will pick the three cash prize winners. So somebody that sent us one of these five labels will win $1,000. Could be one of your listeners for all I know.
Wow, okay, we mentioned three of them already, so I should mention the other two. The other two is not for contact lenses or direct use in eyes, and that's a warning on a small bottle of spray-on anti-fog cleaner.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, who the heck is putting that in their eyes anyway? And the other one, combustion of this manufactured product results in the emissions of carbon monoxide, soot, and other combustion byproducts, which are known by the state of California to cause cancer, birth defects, and reproductive harm. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what kind of product could this be? A box of matches.
Isn't that something? And the funny thing is, we've been using, as a human race, matches for hundreds of years. And the greatest risk of any injury when you use matches is caused by fire. But they don't warn against fire. They warn against something that has injured nobody that we could find in history, the small amount of carbon monoxide that is emitted when you strike a match. And that's one of those, you read the whole label. That's what we call the Prop 65 label.
And considering the fact that it's on a box of matches, which is not very big to start with, let's be honest, matchboxes
right.
aren't big, to fit all of that on a matchbox, to me, leaves very little room for the most important stuff, which might be, you know, keep away from children.
Exactly. Yeah. So and that's one of the reasons we do this contest, is because as warning labels become longer and longer and more absurd, we're not reading the warning labels that we really need. So the personal injury lawyers who file the lawsuits that lead to the warning labels are actually, and I would argue, making society less safe because we have warning label overload and we're missing the important ones.
Mm. It's always fascinating to hear about these wacky warning labels, 16 years now and counting. I thank you once again, Bob, for being on the program with us. It's always a joy and a treat to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me on, Peter. And I happen to know a little inside information that this is the 200th edition of the Stuff File, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because it's my 200th edition of Let's Be Fair. So congratulations. And I don't know, I guess you don't say happy anniversary, but on reaching that mark, that's great.
Congratulations to you, too.
Thank you. And for your listeners, that's just purely a coincidence.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, published by Grand Central Publishing. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0200, and you'll find links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, this week's edition of Let's Be Fair. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Actually, it's the 200th edition of Let's Be Fair. So this week, I would like to mark the occasion by saying thank you to all the stations and programs across North America that carry this commentary each week. 200 weeks ago, we started out with the goal of sharing stories about liability issues that face consumers, homeowners, parents, communities, and businesses. We think it's important to share these stories because even if we're fortunate enough never to be sued individually, the communities we live in, the organizations we belong to, and the places we work at have all been affected by the continuous expansion of liability in America. Let's be fair, some of the best ideas we've had for these segments have come from listeners. So, if you have a real-life story involving a lawsuit that has gone too far, or about how a change in your state has helped put personal responsibility back to work in the courts, we'd like to hear about it. To contact us, visit our website at centerforamerica.org. And thank you very much for listening.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the movie The Purge and whether something like that could actually come to be. And also Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. And of course, we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day and lots more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And if you still don't know about Stitcher Smart Radio, well, you really should. Because, you know, it's the best way to hear programs on the go, on demand. Don't have Stitcher? Well, you can download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Again, absolutely free. And there are thousands, literally tens of thousands of shows on Stitcher Smart Radio, including, of course, this very program, the Stuff File program. And you know, Stitcher Smart Radio is the smarter way to listen to radio. So what are you waiting for? Listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. Just basically any mobile device you have, you can listen to this and other great programs on Stitcher Smart Radio. Again, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Well, a 75-year-old woman in the southwestern town of Offenburg in Germany called police at around 3 a.m. complaining that she couldn't sleep because her doorbell was always ringing. Now, police said officers dispatched to investigate the cause quickly tracked down the culprit. Actually, it was culprits, kind of. An ant nest next to the doorbell. They say the insects had built such a big home that the nest pressed against the switching elements just pushed them together, keeping the bell ringing. Officers silenced it by removing the nest with a knife. Well, you know, this is the one time you can't blame the constant bell ringing on religious groups dropping by your door, because you know they're out there, usually in the morning, when you're trying to sleep. A police officer in Highland Beach, Florida, was perplexed after pulling over a speeding Mitsubishi, but it didn't have a driver. It was at 3 a.m., so perhaps the driver slipped out of the passenger side door? Well, as officers checked the area, the car's light suddenly went off, and it sped away at 65 miles an hour and made rapid evasive maneuvers. They caught up with it again and pulled it over again, and there was still no one behind the wheel. This time, officers watched the car more carefully, and a half hour later, they saw someone moving inside. They discovered that the driver had never left the car, but simply slipped into the trunk behind the back seat to hide. Maximilian Andrew Schroeder, age 28, was hauled out of the trunk and arrested on charges of fleeing, plus marijuana and drug paraphernalia possession, and was released after posting $3,000 bail. Really? He was released? Why would you release this guy? He's sort of a very slippery character to begin with. I wouldn't release him once I had my hands on him. And by the way, the cop must have felt like he was in an old episode of Knight Rider. Yeah. Anyway, here's a police complaint that I want to read. Just this one sentence. Mr. Briones was observed to be having sexual intercourse with a passenger and sped off. Yeah, I've had a nickel for every time I said a sentence like that, huh? That was according to the Albuquerque, New Mexico police complaint against Luis Briones. Police allege he drove through a red light and into another vehicle with such force that the woman was flung from his car. By the way, she didn't have a stitch of clothing on. Briones allegedly tried to abandon her and drive away, but a witness pulled his key out of the ignition and Briones, age 25, missing one shoe and wearing his shorts inside out, hit himself in a cactus. Ow! Yikes. Police also accused Briones of disobeying them, responding belligerently to paramedics and disrobing, or trying to, in a police car. When they looked into Briones' vehicle, police found a no longer full container of vodka. He was booked without bond on aggravated driving while intoxicated and other charges. The woman was hospitalized with head wounds. Now, they had sex at high speed and nearly spent the rest of their lives doing it. And boy, if you had died in an accident like that, is this how you really want to be found? I'm just asking. I'm just asking. And while we're on the subject of love, or what people think love is, here's a weird love triangle story out of Ohio. A woman, her father, and her boyfriend... No, that's not the love triangle, trust me. But a woman, her father, and her boyfriend lured her love rival to their trailer... Yes, I did say trailer, and held her down while they tried to cut off her fingers with pruning shears. Sheena Moore, age 24, allegedly invited the victim to the home in Mason, Ohio, after learning her boyfriend, John Gully, age 31, had been sending flirtatious text messages to the woman. The victim, a 27-year-old artist and friend of Moore's, agreed to go to the home to discuss the problem, but when she arrived, Moore's father, 450-pound Gerald Moore, Jr., age 49, allegedly hit the victim with his cane while his daughter began punching her. Moore, her father, and her boyfriend then allegedly pinned the victim to the ground and tried to cut off her fingers with said shears. Authorities believe they wanted to ruin her career as an artist, but the victim kicked Gerald Moore and was able to escape. Gully was later apprehended by officers and arrested along with the Moores. A Warren County grand jury indicted Gerald Moore Jr., Sheena Moore, and John Gully on felony charges of kidnapping and felonious assault. Okay, now, what seems odd to me is that it was the boyfriend who was sending the flirtatious text messages, but they tried to cut off the fingers of the woman to whom they were sent. I guess this only makes sense in Ohio. I have no other explanation. I don't know. Anyway, we have time for one more story here on the Stuff File news section of this part of the program before we get to our next guest, okay? I'm still thinking of that last story. It's in my head. I can't get it out. But here is a pro tip for you, boys and girls. If you're going to carjack someone as they pull into their driveway, don't pick the guy who's into MMA and just spent his evening watching UFC. A man from Stockton, California claims he fought off a carjacker by using several Ultimate Fighting Championship moves, including a series of chokeholds. 29-year-old Abel Simmons and his family say they just returned home from watching a UFC fight when a man began pounding on their SUV's windows. Simmons' wife was driving, and his two sons, a two-year-old and an infant, were in the back seat. Simmons told authorities he jumped out of the car's passenger side while his wife called 911. The attacker allegedly punched Simmons in the face, prompting the 29-year-old to perform the martial arts moves. "I got him into a rear naked choke, and he started rolling and squirming," Abel said. "I had him in a guillotine choke, and he was not getting out of that." According to a Stockton Police Department activity report, Simmons restrained the suspect, Shron Jones, until police arrived. Jones, who was 32, was arrested and charged with attempted carjacking, battery, and resisting arrest. You know what? I'm going out on a limb here, and I know that the two kids in the back seat are only two and an infant, but, you know, memories are instilled at a very early age. I'll bet this guy's two sons will never misbehave. Ever. On to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. This summer, the sci-fi film The Purge is out. It's a story that is set in 2022, now the United States becomes a nation reborn with crime and unemployment rates hitting an all-time low. As a result, the government has instated a 12-hour period from 7 p.m. on the evening of March 21st to 7 a.m. on the morning of March 22nd called the Purge, during which all crime is legal and emergency services are suspended. Is such a society possible? Is that where we're headed? On the line with us right now to talk about it is Dr. Wendy J. James, a psychologist and the owner of Life Consultants. And she joins us on the line from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, and yes, this is coming out. And as a psychologist, first thing I want to say, it's a movie. So we'll talk about it as a movie, but also the psychological aspects of what this is bringing up.
Well, that's always the interesting thing, the psychological aspect. You know, it's a very creative mind that comes up with a movie like this, but creativity often comes out of theory, obviously, and is there some kernel of truth behind the premise of the movie?
Yes, there is. And I think right now we're going through a moment in time where the basic needs, psychological safety needs and physical needs, is part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I'm seeing a lot of movies about those. The basic life needs is shelter, warmth, and security and protection. And this is talking about that being taken away. So even if it's for 12 hours, it's being taken away. And it takes people into looking at how do I survive on my own without anyone to help me, and how do I help my family psychologically to get through this process. And we all, you know, I will do anything to protect my family.
Well, let's look at the other side of the coin as to the psychology of that, and that is a society which has to decide that to let off steam, they have to allow this purge once a year. What is that saying?
That says psychologically that we're in a bad spot where we don't give and care about others to be building up as a community, like in disasters that happen. And we've had a lot lately in the United States of tornadoes, and people pool together to help each other in their community, which is a good thing. Now we're looking at something that people are afraid to help each other in a community, from what I can see this movie's going to be about. And instead, they're separated from each other, which is something that is happening with technological advances, with internet and fear of people, depending on their neighbors and neighborhoods and communities.
Well, let me toss this idea. There's a yin and a yang in all of us, a good and a bad, so to speak, and there's got to be a balance of the two. Now, we are living in a more and more politically correct society, and while on paper that's a good thing, sometimes it was some people's political incorrectness that was sort of a release valve.
I can't agree more. I've just been talking a lot about that on some movies where, you know, 20 years ago or, you know, 1970s, we were able to laugh and joke and talk about something that was going on, either social, economic, or political, or ethnical. And now, if you say something, you're afraid that you're saying something to offend somebody. And we need to be a little more forgiving about that. That doesn't mean that there should be abuse or, you know, emotional outlets. But at the same time, we need to laugh at each other and come together as a community.
Well, let's look at another issue that's very big in the news as well, and may play into this, and that is the idea of bullying. No one likes the idea of bullying. It's become an epidemic. We have situations in schools where kids are literally killing themselves to get out of the pain of bullying. But again, on the other side of the coin, there was a time when it was considered something almost a rite of passage, and it was teaching you something to how to deal with someone who was a bully to you.
And I think you brought up a very valid point. There's two sides to that. No psychologist, teacher, parent wants a child to be bullied. But at the same time, you know, children learn they shouldn't be worried about, you know, committing suicide or attempting suicide or being texted or isolated from their class because of Facebook and Twitter and all these other things, and parents and teachers must take action. Yet there is something that happened to change our society where children were bullied and they learned to stand up to the bully, and it's never appropriate. But they were like, yes, you know, go out and you're going to be bullied. Don't let them bully you and stand up for yourself. And so we become where we think it's normal and it's not. Yet it is, in a way, children do behave like that. They learn to get along by being picked on or rejected, and we need to make sure it's not extreme, because then it leads into psychological problems and depression and attempted suicide. At the same time, it is a normal part of life.
In the movie The Purge, which is coming out now, the setting, as I mentioned, is in the year 2022, which isn't that far away. It's less than 10 years. Having said that, there have been a lot of films over the years that look into the future of mankind in a more apocalyptic way, and this one is no different. From your perspective, even though this is just a movie, it's just entertainment, is there something to be learned from a film like this?
Yes, I think I'm seeing a lot of movies and films, and there's one that's real popular here that was on zombies. And it seems like a lot of the films today are concentrating on the safety needs, the belonging needs, the biological, physiological needs of food, shelter, and not looking at what we need to do as psychologists, and that's promote Maslow's, which is esteem needs, achievement, status, responsibility, and self-actualization, personal goals. So I see, as a psychologist, the focus on the lower basic needs of survival and belonging, and not into the self-esteem needs of status, responsibility, achievement, and personal growth, and that concerns me.
A lot of films, as I just mentioned, don't have a positive outlook for the future. You are a trained psychologist. You weren't born a psychologist, so let me ask you this question. Through your years of training, through your years of practice, are you a more optimistic person than you were before, or less optimistic person than you were before?
The same.
The same.
I've always been optimistic. Although there was, you know, optimistic, because I think we need to focus with our children on what they can achieve and getting their esteem. And that is by learning you succeed and fail. And how can we make a difference in the world?
I thank you very much, Dr. Wendy, for being on the program with us. We should mention your website, Life Consultants. What will people find when they go to your website, lifeconsultantsinc.com?
I have topics on all psychological issues, on issues about suicide and depression and mental health and relationships and children and children with violence and video games, to name a few. So thank you for your time.
Dr. Wendy, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Wendy J. James. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0200, and you'll find links to Wendy's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is, in the batter box, Mr. Stuart Nauman. How you doing, Stu?
Hey, pretty good, Peter. Swinging the bat here. I have a question to ask you.
Yes, what's that?
Before I step on, up to the plate.
Yes.
Where were you in 46?
Still waiting 12 years for creation.
Me, I was waiting about 17.
Okay.
But we're going to go back to 1946 because the 1946 baseball season in particular, it was the first season when its major stars such as Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Stan Musial, and Bob Feller would be returning to the diamond after nearly 4 years of serving overseas in the military during World War II. And then New York Yankees owner Larry McPhail was hoping that his team, the Yankees, would bring the fans, back during his first post-war season, another World Series pennant. However, the Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals had other plans. And this is the premise of Walbert Weintraub's book called The Victory Season. From the first days of spring training to the final out of the World Series, Weintraub gives a thorough, fascinating history of how the 1946 season saw America through a turbulent first year of peace and opened the door to the golden age of baseball before the Dodgers and Giants moved west more than a decade later. Now, the main focus of the book is the two teams that dominated the baseball world in 1946, the Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals, and how their respective superstars, Ted Williams and Stan Musial, began to build upon their Hall of Fame careers through their hitting prowess. Now, Weintraub also examines the other major issues that affected Major League Baseball in 46, such as the preservation of the controversial reserve clause, the low salaries of many major league players, and how the low payroll precipitated several major league players to defect to George Pascal's Mexican League, and also the first rumblings of a players' association as well that didn't pan out. Now, one major issue that was faced in pro baseball in 1946 was the breaking of the color barrier, and how the Brooklyn Dodgers and its larger-than-life president Branch Rickey was taking the necessary baby steps to finally breaking down that barrier. Now, this was done thanks to Jackie Robinson and the Montreal Royals. Now, in the book, the contribution made by the Royals in the city of Montreal to this significant event in baseball history gets the deserved due in the book. It gets its due, and much deservedly so. And also, Weintraub likes to thoroughly research the world and society as a whole during the historical period that's covered in the book to give the reader an all-encompassing world that surrounded the 1946 baseball season, which the world and the United States was undergoing an uneasy peace. Racism was still rampant in the Deep South. American labor was virtually paralyzed by countless strikes and disputes because over 5 million workers were on strike during that year. Many major cities underwent severe housing shortages, and plenty of food essentials were still being rationed or undergoing their own shortages. In fact, there was such a large-scale shortage of beef that during the World Series that year, St. Louis Cardinal employees were literally scrambling to scrounge up steaks to feed the hungry hordes of sports writers that came to St. Louis to cover the series.
Yes, because you really need to feed the sports writers. Yes, that's always, having been someone who's worked in the press box, you need to feed the sports writers.
Yes, a hungry sports writer.
Because they can turn ugly real fast.
That's right. You know, empty stomach means, you know, lots of copy of, lots of unfriendly copy. And the book, yes, it does end appropriately with the pitch-by-pitch, hit-by-hit account of the 1946 World Series between the Red Sox and the Cardinals, in which both Williams and Musial both they experienced performances at the plate that were below their own expectations. So the victory season is a fascinating account of how Major League Baseball became a much-needed tonic for a world that was gradually licking its wounds from 6 years of war and ushered in a golden age that the sport was about to enjoy for the next 15 years.
So you're saying that Williams didn't live up to his expectations that time?
Well, during the regular season, yes, but not during the World Series.
Maybe you should have quit while he was ahead.
Maybe, and wait till the 47th season and the 48th season.
Yes.
49th season.
Or the fridge.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he's waiting for the next big Red Sox Nation to happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you want to read some other books if you're a big baseball fan like we are, let me recommend first of all Robert Weintraub's previous book, The House That Ruth Built, excellent account of the New York Yankees' first season at Yankee Stadium in 1923 and how that season made them a force to be reckoned with. And you know the building of the dynasty that we come to know and love. Also, if you want to know more about the Brooklyn Dodgers, I recommend Bums. It's an oral history of the Brooklyn Dodgers by Peter Goldenbach. And also a book that's on the same, I think, inspired Robert Weintraub to write both House That Ruth Built and The Victory Season is David Halberstam's blockbuster book from 1989 called The Summer of 49. Which is almost in the same vein, but I think Weintraub is sort of like the heir apparent to Halberstam writing these type of books.
I was about to say, which is why I didn't bring up which books we do recommend, because I was about to say, when it comes to books on sports, is there any sport that has more excellent books written about it than baseball?
Oh, you know what? You can't, because you can put this way, with baseball, you could rattle off a whole litany of titles off the top of your head.
Best-selling titles at that.
Yeah, exactly. And, for hockey and football, you know, maybe a handful. I mean, for football, maybe Gale Sayers' I Am Third or Jerry Kramer's Instant Replay, his Green Bay Packers Diary. Hockey, there's maybe one or two that could come to mind, but, really that just don't stick out and stand the test of time.
Dick Irvin's hockey books, that maybe, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And if you get his first book, Now Back to You, Dick, his official memoir, which is out of print, I recommend that one highly.
A couple of baseball books that I always enjoyed. I'm not even going to mention The Typical Ball 4 because that's on everybody's list, and that is an excellent book. But Leo DeRocher's Nice Guys Finish Last. And also the Umpire Strikes Back, Ron Luciano.
Oh yeah, the first, he wrote several books, but his first one is his best one.
Yeah, those are some amazing, amazing books.
And I just want to add one more. If you want to learn about the early days of baseball during the dead ball era and a little bit before, read the oral history by Lawrence S. Ritter, The Glory of Their Times, that was published in 1966, because he managed to interview quite a lot of the survivors and the surviving veteran players of that era. I mean, probably for the very last time, so quite a unique book.
Excellent. And how can people find you, Mr. Stuart Nolman, when you're not in the batter's box or, you know, putting that rosin in your hands?
Or playing shortstop, Peter?
I wasn't going there.
No, but you could have.
I wasn't going there.
First of all, let me just say, just get the Victory Season by Robert Weintraub, published by Little Brown, $29.95. And if you want to read me, you could go to the West End Times in print or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much. Hey, better, better, swing better.
There you go. Into the vines at Wrigley Field.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We have time for a few more Stuff File news stories before we get to the idiot of the day. Energy West, the natural gas supplier in Great Falls, Montana, had tried recently to raise awareness of leaks by distributing scratch-and-sniff cards to residents demonstrating gas's distinctive rotten egg smell. In May, workers cast aside several cartons of leftover cards, which were hauled off and disposed of by crushing, which released a scent and produced a massive blanket of odor over downtown Great Falls, resulting in a flurry of panic calls to firefighters about gas leaks. Oh, the irony. And in one of the more prominent recent That's My Story and I'm Sticking to It cases, Vicky Price, age 60, finally gave up in March and admitted to a judge that her husband, not she, was driving their speeding car in 2003. She was married to the one-time high-ranking British government official, Chris Hune, whose license would have been suspended had he been driving, and thus she volunteered. The couple's 10-year ruse had inspired two trials ending without decision. Hune rewarded Price for her loyalty in 2010 by having an affair. The couple are divorced and will be imprisoned separately for perverting justice. Hell hath no fury, yada, yada, yada. And finally, Herson Torres is freed. Yes, as Bloomberg Businessweek reported step by step in April, Torres was recruited by a Defense Intelligence Agency operative to rob a Virginia bank in order to test first responder reaction times. If caught, Torres's arrest would be removed, according to Theo, the operative. The skeptical Torres asked advice of various authority figures, including two bemused lawyers, but Theo was able to calm them with a dazzling display of CIA jargon and procedures. Now, Torres was indeed arrested, and Theo indeed sprang him, but with a judicial order that was forged. Ultimately, Theo was revealed to be frustrated computer techie Matthew Brady, age 26, who lives with his mother and grandmother in Virginia. And despite his obviously world-class bluffing skill, he pleaded guilty in May and was ordered treated for his paranoid schizophrenia and delusional disorder. Wow. How fast do you think this story will be turned into a Fox television series? I mean, really? Sheesh. Yeesh. Anyway. I got a couple more stories here. One more before we get to our idiot of the day. Christopher Robinson, age 23, became just one of the many recent suspects whose addiction to Facebook did him in. Robinson had never made a single child support payment in the 3 years since a court order was issued in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the case had languished over how to prove he was actually hiding money. Using other evidence for probable cause, the prosecutor got a warrant to search Robinson's private Facebook information and discovered a candid photograph of him laughing over a pile of money. Now, this guy could have been the idiot of the day, but he's not. I mean, there seems to be way too many people who have become undone by social media. It's practically a stupidity epidemic going on out there. So he's not the idiot of the day. However, this next person, well, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
An unnamed 48-year-old man in Beaver Creek, Ohio, admitted to police that he was unfamiliar with handling firearms. But when an unidentified man approached him at a gas station offering to sell him one, he paid $50 for the pistol. The man said that he wanted a gun because his home had recently been burgled. Once he got it home, the man went into his bedroom to try to figure out how to work it and to see if it was loaded. He did that with the barrel pointing toward him and managed to shoot himself in the chest. He went and found his girlfriend, who called 911. Police are holding on to the gun, which is a .22 caliber, and the man is expected to survive. Now, the gun, loaded. His head, clearly not loaded. I mean, this story came dangerously close to being a Darwin file entry, but it's not, because basically the guy lived. But why, oh why, would someone decide to check if a gun is loaded by pointing it at themselves? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid. But even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0200. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0200. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.